lenient punishment and a rare instance of the Zionist regime troop being held accountable for a Palestinian's death. The killer medic is hailed as a hero for Israelis, and the Israeli regime has moved to criminalize the filming of Israeli regime troops as part of a wider effort to maintain impunity over abuses against Palestinians. The Palestinian Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions National Committee called on the International Criminal Court to stop delaying charges against enablers of Israeli regime apartheid following the execution of Salima. B'Tselem described the shooting death of Salima as a summary execution. The UN Human Rights Office in Palestine stated that it was shocked by the apparent extrajudicial execution of Salima. The UN office said extrajudicial killings such as this are the consequence of the regular resort to lethal force by well-armed and well-protected Israeli personnel against Palestinians, an almost total lack of accountability for killings and injuries of Palestinians by Israeli forces. Israeli regime leaders rallied around the border police officers who executed Salima, with Police Commissioner Kobi Shabtai proclaiming them as heroes. He was echoed by Border Police Head Amir Cohen, who said, "The heroes acted according to how we trained them," unquote. Bennett tweeted his appreciation for the Border Police officers who neutralized the actor. His accolades were accompanied by a photo of the two officers with their faces blurred out. Bennett added that the video released by police and shared by the Zionist regime's Hasbara, or official propaganda apparatus, turned the perception on its head. The Zionist regime's so-called justice ministry reportedly opened an investigation into Salima's action, but the two officers have returned to operational duty, according to Israeli media. The Zionist regime's self-investigation mechanisms have long been dismissed by human rights groups as a fig leaf for the occupation, as B'Tselem has put it. The group, along with the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, issued a report earlier in the week exposing the Zionist regime's sham investigation into the killing and maiming of protesters during Gaza's Great March of Return. The Zionist regime forces and settlers have killed more than 330 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, including East Al-Quds and Gaza, since the beginning of the year.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, Islam is a complete code of life, and it guides and teaches us in every sphere of life. So it addresses all aspects of our life, and it teaches us to be patient. Islam teaches us that we have to exercise patience in our difficult situation in this way and in this life, and it encourages us to have a strong belief on Almighty Allah, because patience is a sign of belief. And those who are patient, they trust God, they consign their matters to Allah. They are patient, leaving the rest for Allah, thinking and hoping that Allah will never leave him alone. That is what actually patience is about. We should be patient, and as we are patient, we should wait for Allah to help us in our difficulties in our life and the challenges we face in our life. So The Quran repeatedly advises Muslims and believers to exercise patience. Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu ista'inu bis sabri wa salah, inna allaha ma'as sabirin. Chapter Baqarah, verse 153. Those who believe, be patient. Surely Allah is with those who are patient. Ista'inu bis sabr means you should seek help from patience and from prayer. Inna allaha ma'as sabirin. Surely Allah is with those who are patient. And of course, Allah said to those who are facing challenges, difficulties, or trials and tribulations that He is with them by guiding them, supporting them, and granting them a clear victory. Almighty Allah says, surely Allah is with those who are sabirun. Inna Allaha ma'as sabirin. So God is with those who are patient. And this is another verse. You can find this verse in chapter 8 of the Holy Quran, verse 46. Verse 153 of chapter Al-Baqarah is another verse. So every now and then the Quran and Allah Almighty promises believers that Allah is with them and that God will help the sabirin, the patient ones, and they will reward them, they will grant them victory, Allah will support them and guide them through difficulties and hardship. Of course, from this verse and other verses of the Holy Quran, we can say that no matter what situation we are in and what situation we are facing in our life, we should be faithful and patient because Allah is with us and He never leaves us alone. You know, love of Allah makes patience easier. This is what I'm going to say. A person who loves Almighty Allah finds it much easier to be patient and to be perseverant. This is because he sees everything as coming from Allah. And if it comes from Allah, there must be a reason for it. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Welcome to your program for a better life. We are discussing patience. On the day of Ashura, when Lady Zainab Salamullah Alayha was asked by someone as to what she saw on the day of Ashura and was it very much painful or not, Lady Zainab Salamullah Alayha just thanked Allah. She thanked Allah for whatever happened on that day, even though it was painful. But still, it doesn't mean that we should complain. We should be thankful to Allah that whatever comes from Allah is good. It is for the good of man. Now, a person who loves wants the beloved to see him in the best of states, and so he proves the best of patience. Patience is a sign of trust, a sign of belief, and a sign of consigning one's matter to Allah. So that's why patience is a kind of virtue which enables the individual to proceed towards worthy goals. You know, dear brothers and sisters, it so happens that many times in our lives something happens to us and we feel that this is the worst thing that can happen to us. But then after the hardship, the difficulties that we go through, and when the adversity is gone and relief and ease comes, we realize that the difficulty was a blessing in disguise, you know. We realize that the difficult times had happened for good to come. There is a reason behind every evil thing. Sometimes God wants to test us. Sometimes we have to face hardships and difficulties in our lives so that we can live our life in a better way. We understand the value of what is good and what is bad, you know. So it is important that believers have to be patient and know that Allah Almighty is sufficient for us. Hasbunallah ni'mal wakil. It suggests that we have to rely on God, and God is sufficient for us. He is the best of the being whom we can trust in our life. And He is the best sustainer. He is the best arranger of all our affairs. In Allah huwa al-ghaniyul hamid. Of course, He is self-sufficient, and He is, of course, sufficient for us as well. He is to be praised for whatever He grants us, for whatever He bestows upon us. And of course, it's Allah who will guide us to that which is good for us in this life and the hereafter.
Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
If we don't get the reward of patience in this world, obviously, then it will surely be saved by Almighty Allah for the hereafter. On the next day, on the hereafter, you can say in the afterworld, you know, we will get the reward for being patient. Our beloved Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, said, "Ni'ma salahul mu'min as-sabr wa ad-du'a." The best of weapons of a believer is sabr wa ad-du'a, patience and supplication. These are the best of the weapons which a believer can use in his life to live a life of honor and dignity. And also, there is a saying from the Commander of Faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, Bihar al-Anwar, volume 71, hadith 73. According to Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the Commander of Faithful, peace be upon him, sabr is like the head in relation to the body. If there is no head, the body will start rotting. It will start decomposing, because without the head, the body will decompose. This is what the Commander of Faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, says. فَإِذَا فَارَقَ الصَّبْرُ الْأُمُورَ, if there is no patience in the matters we encounter in our life, or if there is no patience in our lives, then فَسَدَتْ الْأُمُورِ, then things will start becoming worse and worse. فَسَدَتْ الْأُمُورِ, they, things will become corrupt. So they will deteriorate. This is what sabr is, and this is the role of patience. Respected brothers and sisters, patience is the great virtue. And the significance of patience is that we will gain the rewards and benefits, both in this world as well as in the afterworld. And of course, tremendous, you know, rewards, tremendous benefits have been mentioned, both in the hadith of the Prophet and also in the Holy Quran for sabr. So, dear brothers and sisters, let's know that there is great concept, there is a great reason behind the challenges, difficulties, trials, and tests and tribulations we go through in our difficult times. All the calamities we face and the troubles which come on our way are character builders. They shape our characters, and they make us stronger, of course, than before. And I pray to Allah to grant us the strength to face difficulties, adversities and challenges with patience. Ameen ya Rabbil Alameen. Thank you very much.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
COVID researchers are working at breakneck speed to learn about the variant's transmissibility, severity, and ability to evade vaccines. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written jointly by Ewan Calloway and Heidi Ledford Writers. This article is published under the heading, "How Bad is Omicron? what scientists know so far. Stay tuned for the details, please. Barely a week has elapsed since scientists in Botswana and South Africa alerted the world to a fast-spreading SARS-CoV-2 variant now known as Omicron. Researchers worldwide are racing to understand the threat that the variant, now confirmed in more than 20 countries, poses to the world. Yet it might take scientists weeks to paint a more complete picture of Omicron and to gain an understanding of its transmissibility and severity, as well as its potential to evade vaccines and cause reinfections. Wherever I go, everyone says, "Tell us more about Omicron," says Senjuti Saha, a molecular microbiologist and director of the Child Health Research Foundation in Dhaka, Bangladesh, adding, "There is so little understanding of what's going on, and that's true even for scientists." Nature rounds up what scientists know so far about the Omicron variant. How fast is Omicron spreading? Omicron's rapid rise in South Africa is what worries scientists and researchers most, because it suggests the variant could spark explosive increases in COVID-19 cases elsewhere. On December 1st, South Africa recorded 8,561 cases, up from the 3,402 reported on November 26, and several hundred per day in mid-November, with much of the growth occurring in Gauteng province, home to Johannesburg. Epidemiologists measure an epidemic's growth using R, the average number of new cases spawned by each infection. In late November, South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases, NICD, in Johannesburg determined that R was above 2 in Gauteng. That level of growth was last observed in the early days of the pandemic. Richard Lessels, an infectious disease physician at the University of Natal in Durban, South Africa, told a press briefing recently. Gauteng's R value was well below 1 in September, when Delta was the predominant variant and cases were falling, suggesting that Omicron has the potential to spread much faster and infect vastly more people than Delta, says Tom Wesseliers, an evolutionary biologist at the Catholic University of Leuven in Belgium. Based on the rise in COVID-19 cases and on sequencing data, Welsers estimates that Omicron can infect 3 to 6 times as many people as Delta over the same time period. That's a huge advantage for the virus, but not for us, he said. Researchers will be watching how Omicron spreads in other parts of South Africa and globally to get a better read on its transmissibility, says Christian Atlas, a computational epidemiologist at the University of Bern, Switzerland. Heightened surveillance in South Africa could cause researchers to overestimate Omicron's fast growth. But if this pattern is repeated in other countries, it would be very strong evidence that Omicron has a transmission advantage, adds Atlas. If it doesn't happen, for example, in European countries, it means things are a bit more complex and strongly depend on the immunological landscape, so we have to wait. Although genome sequencing is needed to confirm Omicron cases, some PCR tests can pick up a hallmark of the variant that distinguishes it from Delta. On the basis of this signal, there are preliminary indications that cases, although extremely low in number, are rising in the United Kingdom. That's certainly not what we want to see right now, and suggests that Omicron could indeed also have a transmission advantage in the UK, Atlas adds. Can Omicron overcome immunity from vaccines or infection? The variant Sufrais in South Africa hints that it has some capacity to evade immunity. Around one quarter of South Africans are fully vaccinated, and it's likely that a large fraction of the population was infected with SARS-CoV-2 in earlier waves, says Wesseliers, based on heightened death rates since the start of the pandemic. In this context, Omicron's success in South Africa might be due to largely to its capacity to infect people who recover from COVID-19 caused by Delta and other variants, as well as those who have been vaccinated. A December 2nd preprint from researchers at the NICD found that reinfections in South Africa have increased as Omicron has spread. Unfortunately, this is the perfect environment for immune escape variants to develop. How well the variant spreads elsewhere might depend on factors such as vaccination and previous infection rates, says Aris Katsoukas, who researches viral evolution at the University of Oxford. If you throw it into the mix in a highly vaccinated population that has given up on other control measures, it might have the edge there, he said. Researchers want to measure Omicron's ability to evade immune responses and the protection they offer. For instance, a team led by Penny Moore, a virologist at the NICD and the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, is measuring the ability of neutralizing or virus-blocking antibodies triggered by previous infection and vaccination to stop Omicron from infecting cells. To test this, in their lab, her team is making pseudovirus particles, an engineered version of HIV that uses SARS-CoV-2 spike protein to infect cells that match Omicron, which harbors as many as 32 changes to spike. Another South Africa-based team led by virologist Alex Segal at the Africa Health Research Institute in Durban is conducting similar tests of virus-neutralizing antibodies using infections SARS-CoV-2 particles. So is a team led by Pi Yong Shi, a virologist at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, who is collaborating with the makers of vaccine to determine how it holds up against Omicron. I was really very concerned when I saw the constellation of mutations in the spike, he says. We just have to wait for the results. Previous studies of Omicron's spike mutations, particularly in the region that recognizes receptors on human cells, suggest that the variant will blunt the potency of neutralizing antibodies. For instance, in a September 2021 Nature paper, a team co-led by Paul Menzies, a virologist at Rockefeller University in New York City, engineered a highly mutated version of a spike in a virus incapable of causing COVID-19 that shares numerous mutations with Omicron. The polymutant spike proved fully resistant to neutralizing antibodies from most of the people they tested, who had either received two doses of an mRNA vaccine or recovered from COVID-19. With Omicron, we expect there be a significant hit. If Omicron can dodge neutralizing antibodies, it does not mean that immune responses triggered by vaccination and prior infection will offer no protection against the variant. Immunity studies suggest that modest levels of neutralizing antibodies may protect people from severe forms of COVID-19, says Miles Davenport, an immunologist at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. Other aspects of the immune system, particularly T cells, may be less affected by Omicron's mutations than are antibody responses. Researchers in South Africa plan to measure the activity of T cells and another immune player called natural killer cells, which might be especially important for protection against severe COVID-19.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, value of knowledge. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of value of knowledge in Islam, in Islamic lifestyle. When we talk about the value of the knowledge, we see that the Islamic text and in Islamic lifestyle, it is said to have the or to know the value of the knowledge. It is important to know the value of knowledge, and it more refers to our inner knowledge rather than the external knowledge. What does it mean by inner knowledge? It means that the capabilities that a person have, the abilities that a person have, and the knowledge that he has himself and how to use them in order to make a better society, that is more important. And this part of the knowledge, which is known as the inner knowledge, it is important to take the society towards the perfection. And if we use our inner knowledge, and if I want to use another word for the inner knowledge, it's better to say that due to inner knowledge, we need to pay attention towards our talent. Everyone has a talent, and that talent can be used in the best way if knowledge is added to this talent. Well, someone has a talent, maybe there are people who have talent from their childhood, but when the knowledge has been added to it, it multiplies many times and it grows in an extraordinary way, and it gives the best results whenever the knowledge is attached to this talent. Therefore, Islam talks about the talent that a person has and its capability and ability that he has. And he should put this knowledge into the way of making the perfect society. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the value of knowledge, and we refer to the inner knowledge, which we said that it is the talent, that whenever this talent is being merged with the knowledge, it gives the best result. Therefore, when we see that in a society, what Islam says in the Islamic lifestyle emphasizes on using the talent with the knowledge that you gain, which basically matches to that talent. And when someone does so, then we can see that such a society in which there are such people, this society advances in technology, it advances in sciences, it advances in the studies or knowledge, it advances in its different we can say fields, and this thing causes that a person will not blindly follow someone. We have a word taqlid. Taqlid means following others. So basically, when we have knowledge in a society which is merged with the talent of the people or the individuals in the society, this talent and knowledge makes the society better. It takes it to the next step rather than just following what the ones before us have done. So it will stop us from just following the others, and it opens new ways for us. And this is important, and that's what Islam is talking about. And that's why Islam gives more importance to the knowledge and gaining knowledge, because as the time is passing, the human is becoming perfect and perfect. Why? Because it is based on the knowledge that he has. This human being does the experiments and it learns more out of it. And on the other hand, there is another knowledge which is given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is provided in the Quran for us. And those footsteps which we need to follow, if we follow them, then obviously we can have a perfect life without any problems, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. France threatens to push for legal action if there is no sign of goodwill in granting its boats licenses to fish in British waters. We now present you an article written by staff writers of the Press Association and Agence France-Presse under the heading, Deadline in UK-France Fishing Row Passes Without Agreement. A European Union deadline for the United Kingdom to grant licenses to dozens of French boats in a post-Brexit fishing row has passed without an agreement being announced. There had been suggestions on Friday, 10th of December, that negotiations over fishing licenses for small French boats in British waters could lead to a breakthrough, but sources said there was no announcement expected from the United Kingdom government as the midnight deadline came and went. France had threatened to push the European Union for legal action and trade restrictions against the United Kingdom if there was not a sign of goodwill in the fishing row in time for a Friday, 10th of December deadline set by Brussels. The European Commission had said it expected the dispute to be resolved by midnight. The main source of contention is the number of licenses to fishing in waters around the British coastline for smaller French vessels that can prove they operated there before Brexit. France says that 104 of its boats still lack licenses to operate in British and Channel Island waters that should have been granted under a Brexit deal the UK signed with the European Union in December of last year. The United Kingdom earlier denied discriminating against French boats and says many of the vessels are unable to provide the paperwork required to qualify for a license. A British government spokesman said, "This is a technical process based on evidence rather than deadlines." But France's Europe Minister Clement Beaune held out the possibility of the UK granting a few dozen more licenses as a gesture of goodwill, which would mean talks could continue, and the European Commission said it was hoping for a breakthrough later on Friday, 10th of December. Clement Beaune told France Info Radio on Friday, "If they stick to their guns, then we will ask the European Commission to begin a legal complaint." Clement Beaune said, "A legal procedure does not just involve papers and courts, it's also measures, for example, customs measures, that Europe can take collectively to tell the British in certain sectors, since you do not respect the agreement, some of your products are not recognised." Recently, the British Environment Secretary, George Eustace, held talks with the European Union Environment Commissioner, Virginijus Sinkevičius. The UK spokesperson said, "Intensive technical discussions over recent days have been constructive. However, they have not yet reached their conclusion," adding, "Our position remains that vessels must provide sufficient evidence of historic fishing activity in order to receive a license." Brussels has said the dispute must be settled by 10th of December, but Downing Street said on Thursday, 9th of December, it did not recognise the cut-off point. A spokesperson for the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said on Thursday, 9th of December, "We've never set a deadline. I recognise they, the European Union themselves, have set one, but it's not one we're working to." Clement Beaune said the British government's comments was surprising, adding, "It's not really a sign of trust." France and Britain clashed repeatedly this year over fishing, as well as migrants crossing the Channel, post-Brexit trade arrangements, and the sale of submarines to Australia. Accusing London of failing to keep its word on Brexit and the fishing licences, the French President Emmanuel Macron said on Thursday, 9th of December, "The problem with the British government is that it does not do what it says. Our position remains that vessels must provide sufficient evidence of historic fishing activity in order to receive a licence." Macron claimed France was willing to re-engage in good faith and called for British re-engagement over the humanitarian question of dangerous channel crossings after at least 27 migrants drowned trying to reach the British coast. Emmanuel Macron told a news conference, "The problem with the British government is that it does not do what it says." He added, "There had been progress in the last weeks and that France wanted full cooperation with London." At an Elysee Palace press conference to present France's plans for a rotating presidency of the Council of the European Union, Emmanuel Macron was asked about the British-French relations. "There have been tensions about how to prevent further tragedy in the Channel as more people try to cross to claim asylum in the United Kingdom." He also said the United Kingdom had an economic model that relied on illegal labour, which was serving as a pull factor across the Channel. He said there is still an opaque system which has existed since the 1980s, where the British economic model rests on the illegal labour of foreigners. If those situations aren't dealt with by the British in good faith, we will always have the situation at our border where France has the goodwill to manage this point of passage. He said, "We need to work in good faith together on the issue of migration." Emmanuel Macron added, "If we want to solve the question of migration between our two countries, which has become a humanitarian question, we need British re-engagement." French President Emmanuel Macron said men and women were living in terrible conditions on the Calais coast because they wanted to reach British soil. He said France had offered accommodation centres and tens of thousands of meals throughout the year, but people wanted to reach the United Kingdom. He deplored the fact that there is no legal procedure on processing asylum rights by the British at the Channel border, which meant people were risking their lives to find a way to reach the United Kingdom in order to live there. President Macron said he hoped the row over the granting of British fishing licenses to French fishers post-Brexit will be resolved before a French deadline on Friday, 10th of December, despite the United Kingdom denying that they're working to any such time framework. Macron claimed, "There has been progress these past 2 weeks. There has been a sincere re-engagement. I hope that the new paths open up on it. I really hope that." The French President Emmanuel Macron said, on defence, Britain had pushed for the AUKUS security pact between Britain, Australia and the United States that prompted Australia to cancel a contract with France to buy submarines. The cancellation of the submarines deal caused uproar in France, with accusations that its allies had stabbed it in the back. Emmanuel Macron for the first time publicly accused Britain of being a fervent promoter of the rival deal. He said, "Can I ignore that the British were, it seems, the fervent promoters of a contract which deliberately fought against France's interest in the Indo-Pacific to build an exclusive alternative vision?" He said all of this did not amount to the signs of flagrant friendship, to use an understatement, but he claimed he wanted to work with the British government in good faith. Britain has claimed the AUKUS deal was not intended to undermine its defence ties with France. Before France's rotating presidency of the Council of the European Union, Emmanuel Macron called for new mechanisms to protect the EU's borders and to provide emergency support for border crises after thousands of refugees gathered on the border between Belarus and Poland in recent months. He told a news conference, "Europe needs to ensure the protection of its borders," adding that France would push for reform of the Schengen area of passport-free travel between 26 countries in Europe. President Macron is due to meet Germany's new Social Democrat Chancellor Olaf Scholz in the coming days, also said the European Union should consider its strict budget deficit rules as governments spend heavily to save their economies from the impact of COVID restrictions.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Islamia!
This is a part of the speech delivered on November 17, 2021 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of the academic elite and top scientific talents of the country. The conditions for strengthening knowledge-based companies, promoting their products and banning the import of their foreign counterparts. A necessary requirement for strengthening knowledge-based companies is to promote their products inside the country. Later on, I will explain the issue of exports as well. Their products should be used inside the country. The way to do this is to ban the import of such products that are manufactured by foreign companies. Some people should not cause a commotion, such as in the case of household appliances, by saying, "Why did you say that the household appliances of such and such country should not be imported?" The requisite to improving and strengthening domestic companies with the ultimate goal of helping them to stand on their own feet is to create a market inside the country for them. The domestic market is not a small one. This market should be given to domestic producers, in particular with regards to the administration and large organizations, which are their biggest customers. The administration, which is the biggest consumer of such products and industrial goods, should buy the things it needs from domestic knowledge-based companies so that imports do not break them. Of course, when we say that imports should be prohibited, this is for the sake of helping domestic factories and producers. However, domestic producers have certain duties as well. They should not raise the price of their products and lower their quality. Otherwise, such a recommendation will be completely useless.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The importance of exports and the role of various organizations in boosting them. So, one issue concerns the domestic market and another concerns the issue of exports. If there are no exports, there will not be the progress that there should be. Knowledge-based companies themselves can be active in this regard, and more importantly, it is the administration that should be active in doing this. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Ministry of Industry can help find foreign markets. The IRIB can help as well. There are some countries that have a good impression of Iran, but if they are asked to name two Iranian products, they cannot. The foreign section of the IRIB should promote these products. Another issue is that I have been told that according to what Dr. Sattari has said, the share of knowledge-based companies in the GDP is less than 1%. Well, this is too little. This share of domestic production must definitely increase.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan called on his people to be patient and trust his government's new economic plan. In remarks after his cabinet meeting, Erdogan said price increases in Turkey were being caused by greed and importer prices. The president also called on Turkish people who own foreign currencies to take advantage of what he called his new economic model's opportunities.
Turkey is the breakout star of the global economic system that is being restructured with the pandemic. We should completely mobilize our country's potential to this end. No one should ever forget that every penny spent on investment and production is a brick laid for the construction of the future of the great and powerful Turkey.
The plan that President Erdogan was trying to convince Turkish people to put their trust in is considered by analysts as a risk, as its results are not only imperative, but also needs time.
The government wants to bring in more foreign currency by increasing the export and, of course, with the low lira value that might encourage investors. The government is trying to attract foreign investments, thinking that this would help increase income and decrease inflation. And to encourage investors, they are lowering the interest rates. This is a risky policy, however, it can be successful. But the result of such a plan will not show now, and it will leave the current country in a bad economic situation for another few years. I'm not sure the people will support the government until then.
Turkey's lira weakened as much as 2.6% to 13.8070 against the US dollar before Erdogan spoke. Lira has lost 46% of its value to the US currency this year. Many here believe that the promises by the president may not be based on solid ground, especially that the plan is considered by economists to be risky. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
Cinema Verite is the title of the only documentary film festival in Iran. The annual event is a once-in-a-year chance for documentary filmmakers from Iran and the world to get together and get their works evaluated by the festival's jury. It's the first time the annual event is held physically after the coronavirus pandemic forced the organizers to hold it online.
Last year, the event was held with no physical participation and all of the films were screened online. This year, we considered two ways, online and physical screening. And the participation was beyond our expectations. Filmmakers from Japan, South America, Germany, and France have sent their works to the festival.
551 films were submitted to the Cinema Verite Secretariat, out of which 179 works were selected and put to the contest. There is no limit for the themes. They can cover the sufferings of war-ravaged nations or deal with the socioeconomic impacts of the coronavirus. But there's one general yardstick. They need to present an unbiased portrayal of the truth.
There are four main sections of full-length, mid-length, and short documentaries, as well as the special jury prize for international works.
The competing films will be screened both online and in theaters in Iran for a week, and the best works will be honored in the closing ceremony, slated for December 16th. Through the course of the cinematic event, renowned documentarians from Iran and the world will be attending the festival to hold workshops.
Fiction films aim to entertain the audience with the imaginations of a filmmaker. But when it comes to documentaries, filmmakers must avoid the imagination factor, yet inspire people merely with realities. Realities that sometimes are ordinary, but need a second but different look. And that's what makes the competition tough in the week-long course of Cinema Verite. Yusuf Jolie, Tehran.
Demonstrations are a staple of the British democracy. A peaceful protest rally last month against the Israeli ambassador, Tzipi Hotovli, leaving a debate at the London School of Economics. The event passed off peacefully. Police made no arrests. But then came a torrent of criticism from British officials and anti-Semitism allegations from pro-Israel organizations, chiefly from the Community Security Trust, CST, a charity with the purported mission of looking after the Jewish community in the UK. Campaigners say the CST misrepresented the event as violent and linked the protesters to terrorism.
And now pro-Palestine campaigners are fighting back. They have called on the UK's charities regulator, Charity Commission, for an urgent investigation into the Community Security Trust for engaging in political activity.
There is a definition on what a charity is.
and what a charity should do. And, you know, to go around and receive huge amount of money, not just from the, you know, ordinary individuals, but from the British government. I mean, British government actually gives CST huge amount of money, and they are almost embedded within the Metropolitan Police, could really damage those who are supporters of Palestine, because they're well-placed and well-respected. That cannot go on.
The letter accuses the organization of routinely attacking those who organize or take part in campaigning for the rights of the Palestinians with tactics such as character assassination and false accusations, all aimed at shielding Israel from criticism.
What they are doing in the pursuit of defending undefensible, they actually begin to attack and demonize those who support Palestinian cause. And, you know, they do it to the Muslims who are doing that, non-Muslims, even those from the Jewish community that honorably is standing and defending the right of the Palestinians.
The pro-Palestine campaigners have also criticized the preferential treatment the Community Security Trust and other pro-Israel organizations receive in the UK, while their Muslim counterparts are frequently demonized. They say the ball is now in the charity regulator's court to hold the CSD to account or throw its own integrity into question. Saeed Purza, London.
The seventh round of talks aimed at reviving the nuclear agreement, known as the JCPOA, resumes in Vienna between Iran and the remaining signatories, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China. Iranian lead negotiator and deputy foreign minister Ali Bagheri Kani says the removal of U.S. sanctions will pave the way for progress in talks on Tehran's return to full compliance.
Resolving differences on sanctions removal requires the serious will and practical readiness of the other side. Once the will is there, we can move toward sanctions removal, and that will create a serious opportunity for progress in talks, especially on Iran's nuclear measures.
EU coordinator Enrique Mora described the negotiations as very difficult, saying there were different positions that the sides needed to marry.
We approach this with the realism necessary to get an agreement, because it's difficult, because there are different positions, because some points are still extremely open, and we have to close them, and we have to close them, and we don't have all the time of the world.
The seventh round of talks began last week, during which Iran presented the other sides with two draft proposals, which it says are based on the 2015 nuclear agreement and the text that all sides had been working on over the previous six rounds. Bagheri said he believed the other sides had come back to Vienna with a more serious will to resume the work.
What I felt today was different from what I had felt on Friday. I feel that the other side demonstrated a more serious will to enter into effective and result-oriented talks.
The expert working group focusing on Iran's nuclear commitments is expected to resume its work on Friday, as talks also continue among various delegations on the issue of sanctions removal. As to the duration of the seventh round of talks, no official timetable has been announced yet. Homolesky, Vienna.
The United States always proclaims itself a leader for promoting democracy worldwide. In line with such mentality, the administration of President Joe Biden hosts a long-promised two-day virtual event, calling it the Summit for Democracy. The event on Thursday and Friday will be attended by over 100 countries. The White House says the gathering plans to defend democracy and human rights at home and abroad. China, which has not been included in the list of invitees, has challenged the U.S. claim of upholding democracy.
No matter how the U.S. glosses over itself, its true face of seeking hegemony under the guise of democracy has long been exposed to the world. The so-called Summit for Democracy will only go down in history as a manipulator and a saboteur of democracy.
Russia, which has also been excluded from the summit, already slammed it as a product of America's Cold War mentality